Okay. Everyone's good? Okay, I didn't you caught up on the last couple rounds?
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to look at the new stuff, but I listened to our previous Habura.
Okay. So in the last Habura, we went through the main Shitos on how to structure the compensation for a Yoraid, right? What kind of reimbursement, remuneration is he entitled to? And in the Gemara itself, it seemed like there were either two or three ways of thinking about his compensation. And of course, just to remind us all, the main idea of Yoraid, I think, is pretty novel, right? That there again, there's no contract, there's no request for the service, but the halacha thinks that the improver, the benefit conferrer, is entitled to compensation. I'm going to send out two articles, Sigazanshua. I'm going to send out two articles that are really interesting articles that you might want to read over the weekend. They both basically think that Yoraid is one of like the important fault lines between like halacha and like some common law, secular law systems. So they think that there's no analog to this idea of Yoraid in Western law. I don't know, maybe Shua could be our legal expert. Since Mitnick's not here, we have to fall back on Shua, I'm just kidding, Shua. But they think, they quote all these good court cases where like a judge says, one man stops. Shua's popping meds over there. One man shines another's shoes. What can the man do but wear them or something? The point being, like, of course you don't owe the guy anything for shining your shoes. You didn't ask him to. He shines your shoes. What can he do but benefit from it? Right? Like, isn't it? Hey, go ahead. Whereas halacha seems to think that if there's someone who confers this benefit on you, you're obligated to compensate him. So that's again, I just want to stress the novelty of the idea, or this is the prima facie novelty. And it's something that we're going to come back to try to figure out what the underlying reason, what the underlying characterization of this halacha is. Well, we spent our time with in the last chavurah, which I felt was really productive, especially just for me to clarify some things, is the different measures of compensation. So, did anybody want to just summarize for that? Give us a 2-minute summary of the different measures of compensation payment for the Yorid? Anybody want to take a stab at that?
Give it a shot, make up for my
Yeah, I didn't. It's the most fresh in your mind, right?
So we saw so we said Rashi kind of converges them, like brings in Shmuel where it doesn't seem like Shmuel necessarily belongs, but we have one interpretation of the Yado al HaTachtona. So the three things that seem to be from the Gemara: Yado al HaTachtona, Yado al HaElyona, and the amount that you would pay for the labor to be done.
Omdim kama adam rotza litim besada zulanota, right? That's what Shmuel had.
Yeah, and so then we, Rashi saw Yado al HaTachtona as, again, your machloka between, or no, Gabe's, is it a fixed cost that just we peg it at a certain amount, or is it a variable cost? But either way, we have the low, Rashi says the lower of the costs or the benefit conferred.
And just notice the benefit conferred is ambiguous, right? That was one of the benefit conferred is ambiguous, but shevach seems to be a distinct kind of way of making interpreting the benefit.
Yeah, a property, the value of the property, the increased value of the property.
Exactly. That I think is the cleanest way to interpret shevach, meaning how much did the property appreciate because of the conferred benefit.
We don't mean like if you planted an apple tree for me, we're not. Maybe this is involved in the benefit in the property value, but. Like if it's now going to produce $100 of apples for me a year, that's not part of the inherently that's not in like on its whether it's a $50 apple tree. I guess that affects the property value, but that's not a standalone consideration.
That's right. The sense that I get, again, it's ambiguous. We could look in other places to nail down how shevach is usually used, but my sense is that shevach is like the appreciation to the property. So if the property with the apple tree is worth $1,000 more than the property without the apple tree, that would be the shevach amount. Okay, so Yad al Tachtona for Rashi is the lesser of either shevach or hutzah. And one thing I was masipik about, we were masipik about in the last chabura, is how to make sense of the variable of the lesser of the two, right? So are these two separate principles, shevach versus hutzah, And then the separate question of Yad al Tachtona, or is it just one function for determining like what the principle is? Okay, so we're going to come back to that a little later. So good. So we have the Yad al Tachtona, Rashi, the lesser of the Shavach and the Hutzah. That comes from the Tosefta and Ksuvis. Then the question is, how does Rashi interpret the Yad al Yona? So I think it was Yoni, right? Yoni pointed us to the Tosefta in Bava Kamma, right, Zolt?
Yeah.
Yeah, so the Zolt pointed us to the Tosefta in Bava Kamma, which is really helpful. Adin, do you remember what the Tosefta said?
Or how Rashi interpreted, or what the Tosefta said?
What the Tosefta said. The Tosefta here in Yud Zayin, in Bava Kamma, says, if it's Yorid Bershus, Shaman Lo V'Yod Al Yona, and that was the greater of the Shavach or the Hotzah, right? So just really the mirror opposite of the Yad al Tachtona for Rashi. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now I think actually, so Zecharia and Noah were arguing that Rashi himself might interpret Yad al Yona differently. And that's based off Rashi and the Galisa Daita de Nichalach, Yad al Yona Kishar Shas Lehair, which sounds like Shmuel's halacha. Meaning, how much would you normally pay somebody for the service, right? What's the going rate for the gardening service, the landscaping service? And I think if you look at the Ramban, I'm just going to fast forward to the Ramban for a second. I think the Ramban reads Rashi that way. I'm not sure if anybody saw this Ramban yet. Here. This is a very important Ramban in our sugya. We're not going to talk about it today. But he cites Rashi, Shaman lo v'yad al tachtona. That's so I think actually the Ramban read Rashi the exact way that Noah and Zechariah did. That, Rashi's not saying that there's something distinct about the Giloy Das, the Nichale compensation amount. Rashi's just... Yad al Yona in this sugya is defined by the going rate for the service, not by the higher of Shavach and Hotzah. So I think that works well with Zecharia and Noah's read. But as Zolti points out, it's against the Tosefta in Bava Kamma, which interprets Yad al Yona as the higher of the Shavach and the Hotzah. And if you see the Sma here, the Sma in Shin Ayin Hei Zayin says, Da dil das, this is the Yorid Sugya in Shulchan Aruch. Da dil das Rashi v'arash b'chol machom sheyado al Yona ma shavach yatzar lotza nota b'shavach kishar shas lehayir. It's a little unclear. So your nota the shavach kishar shas lehayir. Bima otza yisera la shavach nota kol haotza. Half bitul anana klum. To me, that sounds like the Tosefta a little bit, unless this modification of shavach yatzar lotza just assumes that if when the Shevach is higher, it's going to converge with the going rate for the service. So the Sma is actually a little, it's not totally clear to me whether the Sma is more in the Rashi camp or in the Tosefta camp of Yad al Yona. But one thing that I said we should keep in the back of our minds is that maybe there's a distinction between the Nichale amount, right? When there's Giloy Das to Nichale, over there, there's a reason to price it to make the compensation amount kishmuel, kishar shas le'ayir. Maybe in other cases, you'll have yadol ha'al-yona, which is the greater of the shavach and the hotzah. Right? So maybe there's like a reason to distinguish between these rates. Oops. Maybe there's a reason to distinguish between these rates and say that the giloy das and nichale will have one measure of compensation, sada suyalita, sada that's omed to be planted will have a different measure of compensation of Yad al Yona, and shelo bershus sada shena siyalita will have a different measure of sada of Yad al Tachtona. Does this ring familiar? Okay. Let me just mention one shita that I think goes in that direction to get it out there. The Rambam in Hilchos Gzela Perek Yud Halacha Dalid, when he talks about Yored L'toch Sada Chavir Shalo Bershus, if it's a Sada Ha'asuya Lita, he says, Omdim Kama Adam Rotze Litin B'Sada Zulinota. You see how much a person would pay to have his field planted. So like, it sounds like, how much would you pay for the service, right? How much would you pay to have this job done? If it's Eino Asui Alita, Tjadala Tachtona, okay, then in Halacha Zayin, the Rambam says, let's see, Hagyorid Lasada Chavero Birshus, Afilu Nata, Sada She'eino Asui Alita, Shaman Lova Yadoha Al Yona. Shim Haisa Hotza Yestera La Shavach Notel Hautza, Bema Shavach Yasa La Hotza Notel Hashavach. So the Rambam says if it's Yorei Birshus, then you get the Tosefta Babakama amount, the greater of Shavach and Hotza, okay, which is different from that's what he calls Yado Hal Yona. You can see here. Which is different from what he talks about in the earlier halacha of halacha dalid, where if you're yored shalobershus, if it's omed lita, it's omdin kamadim rotza litaim lenota venota mibala sada. Then you do like, this sounds like a shmuel amount, how much would a person pay for the service? Okay. And then when the Rambam talks about nichale, he talks about how yored l'sada chaver shalo bershus v'nata v'yachar kach ba bal hasada v'hishlam abinyan shaman lo v'yado ha'al yona, which is the yado ha'al yona the Rambam defines as the greater of the shavach and the hutzah. So it seems pretty clear from the Rambam that he distinguishes between three different measures of compensation. Yado ha'tachtona, which is for sada yored shalo bershus Besada she'eno asui alita. Then he talks about kama adam rotza litain for yored shelo bershus besada ha'asui alita. And then he talks about yado ha'al yona for yored shelo bershus in a case of gilei das de nichale. So the Rambam here does seem to have these three different categories working for different cases. Let's see, we have two hands here. We have Adin and then Zulti.
Yeah, so I was going to say something about Rashi before that I think we moved past, but I think that this is a really great proof for Gabe's reading of like including labor costs in Hotzah, because at least to me, it seems empirically that if it's just my literal costs of how much I spent on the materials, that's probably less than the going labor, right? That's less than the going labor rate.
You would hope, right?
Yeah. So the fact that, if Yado Ha'al Yona is the greater amount of Shavach and Hotza'a, and the going labor rate is kind of like Yado Al HaTachtona, then it must be that labor costs for the Rambam are included in that halacha zayin hotza'a equation. That seems rather clear to me, unless I'm misunderstanding some concept here.
Yeah, I want to think about that more. I need to spend some more time thinking about the empirical assumptions to be clear on like that. I think the gate point is something I haven't nailed down yet. I see like your motivation here to nail it down in the Rambam. I think it's better if we bracket that for now.
It could be that like the Meiri doesn't make that assumption. Like that's like it could be it's an ambiguous term that's determined differently by different Rishonim.
Correct. You see, something we're going to talk about today is going to shed light on whether the labor costs are included in Hotzos. But let's hold off on trying to pin down that question for now. But what I just want to show in the Rambam clearly thinks that there is this distinction between the three different measures of compensation. And Avisar Zalman points this out in this long piece over here, which we'll talk about a little bit separately, why he thinks that there's a different measure of compensation, why you have these three different measures. You can see here, he says, I think in this, Madamin Yadu Al Yona, this is talking about the Rambam, Hechi de Gali Balabai is Daido de Nichale, Sarech Bior. So he thinks that you can be medayik from the Rambam, as we just were, that there's this distinction between where the Bala Bias consents or expresses his approval of the to the improvements. There he gets Yadu al Yona, but in a Stam Sadeha Suyalita, where there's no ex post expression of satisfaction, then the Poel just gets Kama Adam Mishalem Lishas Lehair, right? So Mr. Zalman wants to know, why is there that discrepancy? Why is there a difference between the ex post facto Gilei Das Tenichale and Sadeha Suyalita? And he says, V'nir Dachilaku De Sadeha Suyalita, Kivan De Omedes Lekach, V'gam Habaylim Hayunotim Im Lokidim Huvenata, L'chein Ein Habaylim Tzrichim L'shalem Ela Kama Rotze Litein. Okay. Aval B'sada She'ena Asuyalita, Kivan She'ba Zeh V'nata V'habaylim Gilu Daitam D'nichalahu, Shapir Yeshlo Zchus V'chelek B'shevach Shanasa Yado. So this is an idea that we made along similar lines, that basically if a sada is a suyalita, but we don't know anything about the particular preferences of the Baal HaSada, then it makes sense to give the poel the going rate for the service. Okay. Because this is like a field that, you know, it's normal for it to be worked this way. So let's just go market rate for the service. But if it's a sada she'ena suyalita, but there's ex post facto consent or approval of the Bala Bias, then it's like I think we view the Poel as having done something more than just a normal service. He's like entitled to have like a partnership stake in the improvement. So Yesh lo zchus v'chelek b'shevach shanas al yado. Then he's almost considered to be like a bailim on the added shevach that he approved. So he gets a chelek in the appreciation of the karka, which is how he's compensated. So I think it's interesting. If it's omed lekach, so we go for market rate compensation. If it's eno asir lekach with ex post facto approval, then we view him as a kind of shutaf who's bailim on the shevach that he created. But this is all Rabbi Zalman's attempt to make sense of the Rambam, who distinguishes between these three different levels. Yadol HaTachtona, in the classic case of Yorid Shalo Bershus with no satisfaction, expression of approval afterwards. Omdim Kama Adam Rotze Litein for a Sada Hasuya Lita. And then this higher amount of Yadol HaAlyona in the case of ex post facto Gilei Das and Nichalei. Okay, Zolt, you had a comment on this?
I had a comment on the Sma a while ago, so we can move on. But I mean, I think it was really interesting. Like the suggestion that, I guess we're continuing the discussion for now, but like it really comes down a little bit to like the nature of what's Mikhaev's paying for the guy's work. And then he seems to be arguing explicitly that in the case of Sadeh Asuyalita, so there you're working, it's just like you're only construing benefit, that's really all you're doing and nothing else. But Sadeh She'en Asuyalita, where the violent later Nichadatam, there it sounds like there's more like a Lockean approach where like there's some type of like ownership in like the actual items that you like, that you could confer and therefore you become like a shutaf.
Yeah, isn't that exactly what Mr. Zalman's saying?
Yeah, I think it's fascinating. I think it's really interesting. But I had a comment on the smub, but I guess we moved on, so I'm happy to table that.
Okay, great. Yeah, good. Good comment. Let me make one. Yeah, so good. Everyone good with the Rambam, and you see how it's clear the Rambam has these three different levels and Mr. Zalman's distinction?
Is it for Mr. Zalman, if it's, let's say, Asuyalita and then Nichalei, would he also say that you get some sort of, like, bylists or whatever we want to call it?
It's a good question. It's actually not so clear, right, which way that case should go. Is it, as Shua said, is it like the ratification that makes it? Is it like the expression of approval after the fact that makes it like he's a chelek in the, that he has like some bylist stake in the karka? Or is it the fact that he like conferred a service when it's not the normal service that's right? That's normally conferred.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, sorry.
Yeah. Meaning you're asking, is the Gilui Das sufficient to make it Yado HaAlyona? Or is it the conjunction of the Gilui Das with it being a Sadashena Suyalita that makes somehow like this guy's activity more valuable or more unique?
Yeah, the thing that I'm like left wondering after Avisar Zaman is that like, it seems a lot, maybe this is just like you said the other day, like the American concept of law and me talking that like, that if I hired labor, then he gets wages. But if I don't hire the labor, then there's a possibility of him gaining some sort of joint ownership in the, or whether you want to call it schutfuss, or like, that seems like, leaving aside the efficiency arguments, like that seems inherently absurd. That by doing unrequested labor, you get a greater stake in the product than you would in any sort of requested labor.
Well, remember that there is a huge risk here in that if the Baal HaSadeh could show that it's lo nichole, then you're gonna walk away with a loss, right? Maybe you'll get your hotzos covered.
But let's say I have the ultimate nichole, which is I ask you to do it. Like, I ask you to do the labor. I clearly want you to do it. And let's say it's a Sadeh She'ena Suyalita. I'm asking you to build a wheat farm in the middle of my cave. You don't get Shevach. You get what we agree to.
Of course. You want to incentivize productive and, novel work, right? So
this is some sort of like big Gantt, like
the Baal HaBayis thought of the idea first. So yeah, he gets a discount, right? But if the Yorid had the ingenious idea when no one else was thinking of it, even the Baal HaBayis didn't think of it, right? Then he's a real shutuf.
That seems crazy to me. And I think
you go to the tailor, right? You tell the guy to hem your suit at the bottom, right? It's called like hemming it, right? And so he does what you asked him to do. So you pay him the going market rate. Okay. But now imagine you show up and the guy like put in these like crazy cuffs at the bottom, right? That only like trendy Italians have or something. So he's like, you're Rachel Lobershus. You didn't want him to do that, right? But then you see it and you fall in love with it. You can never wear a normal suit again after what this guy did to the bottom of your pants, right? So, oh, he's Yorit Shalover Shus, Besada Shena Suyalita. Now he's really he's a shutaf in your fashion style, in your panache, right?
All right. That's like, are you saying this like slightly tongue in cheek, or you think that that's like a reasonable?
I think it's pretty reasonable. I mean, imagine Shua. Shua, one day he gave his shirts in to the tailor. The guy gave it back with a turtleneck unrequested. It changed Shua's life. If Shua had asked him to put the turtleneck in, then okay, that's Shua's Einfall, right? Shua just pays market rate for it. But once his tailor has like a real schutfuss in the fashion style, then maybe the tailor should get more.
And so isn't this, to come back to the efficiency thing, maybe Halacha just doesn't believe in efficiency. Isn't this then incentivizing? Like, worst comes to worst, it's a net zero. I get my hotzos or something like that. So I should just go in and make crazy improvements wherever I can. And like, worst comes to worst, I come out net zero. And best comes to best, I get all these like real shutfuss and all these things.
Yeah, interesting. I need the Yakir's our math guy. Yakir's gonna have to do the aggregate like function here to figure out, you know, what's a net efficiency positive and what's not an efficiency positive. Or now that we have Adam back, Adam could do the analysis for us.
Machine learning.
It's hard for me to figure out like how that's gonna work out like in the macro, right? If you're trying to figure out which of these rules like creates the best efficient outcome. And I don't even know if we should care about the efficient outcome. You know, as Gabe told us, we got to give, we want Metal to have some nachas from Gabe over there. Sorry, so as Gabe told us, but it's something to, but yeah, it's worthwhile keeping in the back of the mind. Okay, so we have Gabe, you had a hand, and then we have Adam.
Yeah, hopefully the kids won't interrupt. I'm curious if, I don't know, maybe you explained this already, how we think about the relationship between Sadash HaSuyalita, and Devin, as I was talking, relating to this, the relationship between Sadash HaSuyalita and the Das of the Baal HaBayis, Are those getting at the same thing? Are they the same mechanism, two ways of trying to evaluate the Taskaba bias? Or are they two separate factors in evaluating the conversation?
Yeah, it's a good point. I think we're gonna hold off on that question because we're gonna come back to it when we talk about Rosh Hashanah and Shalom Rosh Hashanah. And the point that I just want to make here is the more modest point, sorry, from the Rambam Shita, where the Rambam clearly holds that there's a different measure of compensation for Nichale than there is for a Sada Asuya Lita. All right, so Gilui Das to Nichale, the Rambam thinks, you can see over here, if it's Gilui Das to Nichale, let's see, it's Shaman Lo V'yado Ha'alyona. If it's Asuya Lita, it's just Kama Adam Rotze Lita V'notami Balabayas. So you can see Gabe, who looks like Gabe disappeared, but you can see that there are different measures of compensation for that, which suggests that there are two separate things. Do you see that, Gabe?
Yeah, I see that.
Yeah. So definitely in the Rambam, it sounds like Gilui Das to Nichale is triggering a different rule than the mere Sadeh HaAsuya Lita. So we're going to talk separately in our separate discussion about Asuya Lita, Ein Asuya Lita, Rishus and Shalob Rishus, and Nichale versus Lo Nichale, to try to nail down the relationship between those things. Okay, Adam, and then Zolt.
Yeah, going back to Adin's point, and this was Alman. It's interesting because the language of you're taking out Shusfus in the land versus just Hotzah, right, it sounds like you're getting a better outcome from it, but theoretically, we don't know what the value of those two things are, right? Yeah. It could be the hotel is actually better, or it could be it's the same. That's his point, is that theoretically, if you go in, like, I have this land that's completely ungrowable, it's full of rocks, and you remove all the rocks from it, then obviously you're going to now partake ownership in the land.
Yes, Adam's making a really good point here. Mr. Zalman assumes that the chelek and the shevach is always going to be worth more than the going rate of labor, right, Adam? The rate of the service. It's interesting why it's not obvious that's always going to be the case, right? Although I think it is a pretty fair assumption in general, because it would be irrational for you to pay for a service more than you benefit from the service.
Yeah, I think that's a standard. Like, I'm not going to renovate my kitchen for $10,000 if it only increases my house price by $3,000.
Right. Well, except the problem is you might have a crazy balabusta, right, who just is crazy about it. She needs a nice kitchen, and even though it's not going to increase the value of the house.
Fair. So,
you know, like she, maybe it gives her like personal Yishuv Hadas or something.
Men can cook too.
What's that?
Men can cook too.
Oh, that I agree with. I just don't think they get crazy about the aesthetics of the kitchen. I'm kidding. Men can get crazy about the aesthetics of the kitchen also. I agree. All right. Let's see. We have Gabe's old hand, and then Zolt, you go first, because Gabe.
Oh, I just want, you look like you were scrolling down at one point. Are we skipping going back to the Rashba? Because I just had a comment based on what I said last before on the Rashba.
Okay, so let me just mention, let's just summarize the Balamor, and let's get into the new, and then you can mention the Rashba, and then let's get into our new topic. We saw the Balamor had a very different measure for talking about Yadol Yona, Yadol Tachtona. Balamor thought that if there's a spread in the labor market. So do you give the Poel the top end of the spread or the bottom end of the spread? He said, Yadol Yona means you give him the top end of the spread. Yadol Tachtona means you give him like kind of minimum wage that workers get, which sounded like there's never a Havamina here that we're going to pay the Poel for literally his costs, or that we'd pay the Poel for the increased value of the Sadeh. There's no reason why a Poel should ever get that kind of compensation. He's always going to get paid like something, the value of the labor market, like for the labor. The question is, does he get the higher end of the labor market or the lower end of the labor market, of the labor pricing? And that's determined by Yadol Yona, Yadol Tachtona. Now, I thought that's really important because that suggests to me that the Balamor is dealing with a different framework for Yored from the other Rishonim. It's not about, as Yoni put it, like the Lockean labor mixing, you know, that there's some chelek that the Yoreid has in the Karka. There's never a real property claim that the Yoreid has. What's really going on here is he provided a service, and it's almost like a schiras polim. You know, it's just a question of whether you did you implicitly contract him? Is there some implicit ratification of the work that he did? And so we're trying to figure out the rate of the schiras polim. But we're not dealing with something fundamentally distinct here. We're not dealing with like a property issue. We're not dealing with labor mixing. What entitlement does the poel have? Uman kona b'shvach kli. We're not dealing with that. We're dealing just with like schiras polim, and we're trying to figure out what's the right way to compensate this worker for the service he provided. I think I may be wrong. Shua, since you're our common law expert today and you even volunteered gratification for us. Shua, is there a notion of quasi-contract? Is that a thing?
It's a thing, but I don't think it really means this. I think quasi-contract is like when I think quasi-contract is when someone...
Where's Mitnick?
Wait. It's when someone wrongs someone else, basically. So, like, if I... Quasi-contract comes into play where I, like, take advantage of you or some situation like that where you're going to lose out because of my misdeed and there's no contractual protection, but we can, like, fit it into a quasi-contractual protection. I think.
I hear. I guess it's not totally clear to me. Or maybe the idea is that it's like an implied contract.
It sounds to me like it's more like Ethan Zalman's first like approach, which is that it's like some type of, it's almost similar to like somebody, it's like a study has studio lisa that the person wants to have it done anyways. So it's almost like we assume, and it's not actually, this isn't actually the case, but I guess it's a similar type of logic. His argument is that it's a type of like assumed implied contract, the fact that you're doing like a service.
Exactly.
That, like, even if he didn't sign up for it, it's like it's as if it was a service that he paid for.
Yeah. So maybe Shua is right about quasi. Maybe the best way to talk about it is just like, is there some implied contract here? And then we're back in Schiras Polim territory, right? So, yeah, it's implied that you wanted to hire him, Zachin La'adam Shlo B'fanav, and then we just treat him as a poel, and we're trying to figure out how much is the poel's labor worth. I think these are very important paradigms to keep in mind. Which one of these halachos is at work in the Yorid case? Is it a Schiras Polim sugya? Anybody remember where does the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch quote this halacha?
You saw it before Hilchos Gzela.
Yeah, right. They talk about it in Hilchos Gzela, which is very interesting, right? That suggests to me that we're dealing, it's like a property issue, right? It's like, what's mine and what's yours? Am I benefiting from something that's yours? That's why the Shulchan Aruch and the Rambam talk about it in Gzela terms, in Hilchos Gzela. But you could also easily see this as a pure schiras polim question, right? I mean, was there an implied contract here for the service that he provided? And I think that's clearly the paradigm that the Baal HaMor is working in when he says that the measure of compensation is it's about the labor market and we're trying to figure out high end or low end. Okay, and then the last thing we saw is Sefer HaMekach or Rav Haigon, who says that if there's a dispute about the hotsaos, about the expenses, it's Yadol Yona as you go for the high end, Yadol Tachtona as you go for the low end. There's a dispute between the expert witnesses about how much the guy spent or his costs. Gabe was trying to suggest that this shows that the part of the costs are the labor market costs. Right? I think that was Gabe's suggestion.
To support Gabe, how could there, if it's just his straight receipts, how could there ever be why would we ever need an expert weigh in from different, like, show me how much you spent for those tools and stuff like that.
Okay, but you're thinking in a world where like your credit card receipts are readily available and like, you know, in a world where like all those things could be disputed, like how much did you spend, right, for the tree? So
But I feel like why would, like, you know, we're just, like, it's the goal of the experts is just to be like, to be Mamet and Nukimta on like how much rakes cost.
Yeah. Yeah. It says kach v'kachutzi, v'zehomer kach v'kachutzi, right? I mean, it's just a factual, it's a factual dispute, right? It's the, you know, before I started, like, before I started sitting on cases at the Bezdin, you know, you, like, you go through all these sugyas, and the Gemara is obsessed with, like, the people who are Biki and Bishuma, right? It's like, oh, you know, and you're like, what's this obsession with the Biki and Bishuma? And then you see that, like, every case really just turns on, like, the, not that this is the only question, but, like, one of the most important questions is, like, how do you establish, like, the how much was actually spent? What are the actual costs, right? What's the actual value? It's like Biki and Bishuma is like a huge deal, like practically. But yeah, I think it's quite possible that the dispute here is just, you know, Biki and Bishuma and how much he spent. Okay, Gabe here has a comment here. Manli biyadcha achronim are clearly in gezeilamot. Yes, yes. And that the value of crops is pretty, probably very variable and subjective.
True.
So Gabe, you're saying that if it's like a mamoni gabach, paradigm, that's clearly a gzela issue. That's a property question, right? Not this idea of like how much was the service worth. Correct. Yeah. So I think that's going to be one of the crucial fault lines here about how to think about this sugya. So Zolt, let's get your comment here on the Rashba, and then we're going to get into our new material for today.
Oh, I thought that the Rashba's comment requotes what he calls Rove the Gatorshin, which I guess is similar to Rashi. So if you look at like the way he addresses it, it kind of comes back to one of the questions we dealt with last Chabura, which was like how do we view these two models of compensation? And one of the suggestions made was that they're not really two models of compensation. Really, that we're picking one compensation model, and it just happens to be that like we limit it in some cases. So it sounds like from his language that he understands like Rove Farshik or Rashi, that they're really referring to that type of compensation model where really everything's based on hotzah. And as he says, even hotzah yitzel ha-shevach, nothing like hotzah, shir shevach. It makes it sound like we're still basing it based on hotzah. It's just a question of the hotzah is modulated by the shevach.
Yeah, it's a really good diag. I like that diag a lot. This is, we're really paying him, we're always paying him the hotzahs. Just we're capping the hotzos at the shevach, right?
Yeah, which I think is one of the sides that we've presented last before. So why how to explain?
Yeah, that's a really good idea. That's a really good idea. Was this the Gabe? This is the Akir B'Shem Gabe that Gabe himself renounced.
I think it was. Yeah, I think it was Akir B'Shem Gabe.
Yeah,
yeah. The same hotzos shir shevach phrase. It's in the Balamor also, I think.
Yes.
Which is consistent.
Yeah. Here at the end. Lola main lo elahotsa shir shavach. Yeah, it's interesting. I think that's right. That formulation seems to say that it's not that we're paying him. On this view, we're not paying him for the, we're never going to pay him for the shavach. We're just paying him for the hotsa capped at the shavach. That's like that's a limit on how much of hotzos we're going to cover for him. So yes, that's a really good point. I'm glad you mentioned that, just because I want to just to summarize how these compensation questions bear on what could be the underlying machayiv here. So again, I want to just outline three different possibilities for how we think of how a yorate ought to be compensated conceptually, not how much he should be compensated. One view is that we view him like a shutaf, like it's like the labor mixing paradigm. The yored mixes his labor into your property. It's mamoni gabach. Now, you have to compensate him for his contribution, for his shutfis in your karka. Kind of like uman kone b'shvach kli. You have to buy out his property right in your karka. There, it's sensible to talk about paying him for the shevach, right? Pay him for how much he increased the value of your field. A different paradigm you could think of is schiras poalim. I think there you're going to pay him for the market value of his labor, to talk high-end, low-end, But that would make sense. Go for Kama Adamrota Lashalim Lashasle Ayer. It's a possibility. Pay him the labor market value of his service. That would work very nicely with the Poalim paradigm. A third possibility is that all the halacha is worried about here is unjust enrichment. That we don't want a kind of a gzela issue. We don't want the Baal HaSadeh to gain at the loss of the Yored. For that, it's sufficient to just cover the Yored's costs. If you cover the Yored's costs, or Hotzah Shir Shevach, then no one's really gaining at the other person's expense because you've either mitigated the costs of the Yored, or you've mitigated the Hana of the Baal HaSadeh. Right, so you could look at it from that point of view that it's just an unjust enrichment question where it's sufficient to neutralize either the Hotza'a side or the Shevach side. Now, these connections aren't mukhraf. There's ways to obviously say that even paying in the market value of the labor service could mitigate the unjust enrichment consideration. But I want us to start thinking how the conceptual mechayev of Yored will bear on the compensation question. Okay, ad kan for wrapping up our discussion from yesterday. Okay, so let's move into what I want to discuss now, which is actually related to the last point, and that is, when we think of Yored, are we thinking of it only in terms of, like as Gabe said, mamoni gabach, right? It's like literally, there's some property right, some property thing of the poel, of the yored, in the reshus of the baal bayis? Or does it make sense to extend the principle of yored to the pure service sector? I conferred a valuable service on you. I'm entitled to be compensated for it. So is this like almost take the Arei Bleich article? Is this only about things? Right, the things that the tentacles could be attached to. The Gemara talks about things, right? The Gemara talks about trees, Yored Letov Sada Shel Chavero Avinoteyu, Bone Churvaso Shel Chavero, these kinds of tangible monetary appreciation, right? There's like, my thing is in your Rishus. Or is it sensible to talk about this in terms of just pure services, the provision of pure services? So like Shua, for example, let's say gives us some legal consultations. Do we now have to pay him his billing rate for the, you know, the legal services he provided us with? Everybody hear the question? Everybody see the intuitions off the bat before we get into the Rishonim about where you think this sugya should go? Anybody have an intuition off the bat? Evan, was that a hand? Oh, it's Kari or Evan?
Yeah, we could just bring it back to the three conceptual frameworks that we just laid down. So I think the first one, like thinking this as like a shoot-off of a Monica Ba, I don't think that would be so, that wouldn't fit so nicely with sort of like thinking of it something in, like an intangible service or a pure service.
Yeah, I think that's right. Unless you say something that like tangible services could be
right.
Yeah,
you would have to somehow you would have to explain how the pure service would be some sort of shivus. But for
exactly, here, Paul meaning, and meaning we'd have to say that life tentacles could attach to services.
Right. But for Sirus Polim and for unjust enrichment, I don't see why the object matters, right? It's where it's a Baal and Powell relationship or a, you know, two people who you want to make sure that there isn't just some sort of gezel and unjust act between them. It's less about the object of the enrichment or of the schiras.
So this is interesting. I would say I definitely agree with you on this. If it's schiras polim, if this is a schiras polim halacha, for sure. I mean, if anything, the Yorid case and the Gemara is the Chiddush. The more natural application is the service cases, right? I mean, if anything, the Gemara cases of like tangible adding stuff to someone's field, it's just the Hechatimtzi for talking about the service of adding it. it's not the trees that you're paying for, right? It's the service of adding the trees, right? So yeah, I think that's if it's Schiras Polim, then for sure it should extend to these other areas of services. And if anything, the application of the Gemara on Kaf Aleph is novel. If it's unjust enrichment, I see your analysis. I'm a little less persuaded. See, I think it would depend on what kind of unjust enrichment we care about. Because I could hear an argument that like services aren't the kinds of things that are problematic for you to benefit from somebody else. Like it's only really raises kind of gazela issues. It's an interesting question. I don't know, right? I'm not sure on this question. Like when we talk about like zen nana vizeh chaser, is that itself about like things or is there a service issue that goes, I guess it depends more broadly on how the halacha conceives of labor as a commodity. Yeah, that's a really good point. Evan, what do the rest of you think with Evan's point about?
Yeah, I don't know. I think that's like one of the questions in the Zen and as a Luchaser Sugya is like with the, you know, Chatzer, the like Chatzer David Le Agra and the Gavra and the Chatzer David Le Megar and the, you know, like does the Chatzer actually need to be a like already like monetized like entity? Or is like the guy just like, you know, squatting and like getting a service from the Baal Bayis?
Yeah, good. And you're saying over there, it sounds like the...
I don't really remember the Rishonim over there, but I think that's one of the questions.
Yeah, that's good. So you're saying that actually the fact that the Gemara requires it to be commodified as, you know, Chatzer David LeMegar shows that it's not the mere fact that you're benefiting from somebody else. Although there it's a little more complicated because I think it's about whether there's a cost, right? Is there, they're the Gemara trying to figure out, is there some sort of...
Right, is there a cost to the Baal Bayis?
Yeah, yeah. Good. Shua, you have a hand on this?
I think the Zenon of Zolchasar and the Sugya are obviously very, very entangled. I think Rav Shachter has like a whole theory of like first principles for these guys. It's actually kind of one-ish. But I think that what Noah's highlighting is just like, this is not what he's highlighting, but what I'm thinking when I hear him talk is that in the Zenon of Zelo Chaser, so yeah, even if it's low Chaser, it's still like, from an orientation perspective, very different than this case, because in your rape, there is an act on behalf of the person to whom there's a cost, right? Like you've done something intentional. And so the idea that we can just like transpose unjust, like theories of unjust enrichment or things like that across these boundaries, I just think that you need to deal with the fact that like someone made a rational choice, like both halachas responding to this person's choice to be yored or to osapul chaviro, and probably also take into account like what the incentives are for someone to do that post facto, like once the halacha has a
that's a really good point. There's something about the intentional conferring of the benefit in our sugya that is very different from the zenon of zelachaser. I agree. We should keep that in mind. Sure. Zolt, we're going to give you the word on this, and then we're going to move on to the actual cases.
Maybe I missed this part, but I think, I think we need to define what I mean by service versus, employment versus, something like having a product to it. Like, it's not so clear to me, like, how you define the boundary there. Like, take the first case we're talking about, like, Muhammad Ben Beno and then Cabero. Like, it's not clear to me for sure, like, that means, like, there's, is that really a service? Like, I mean, it's hard to qualify exactly. It's not tangible, but like his son went from knowing the Olivet to now knowing Gabriel Brishon. Like there is something, like there is, he did gain in something. So like I think in any service, whatever the service is, I don't know, whatever the other examples you gave for services.
Like, wait a second. Zolt, you're arguing that the Rebbe teaching a child is like the neighbor planting a tree? Like they're both, you're saying that the delta in neurons and brain neurons is like having a tree, is as tangible as a tree in your backyard. Is that the idea?
I agree with you that it's not a tangible change, But I think there is definitely a change. A child who doesn't know the Aleph Faith is not the same child who does know the Aleph Faith.
How's the Rabbi Blythe tentacle supposed to attach to the new neuron stimulation?
Property, it's hard. For property, I think it's very difficult. I agree, but I think that doesn't mean. But I think in terms of like the other language, like I think it's just very important to like notice that it's not so obvious to me that every one of these services, there's no like tangible change. There's no change happening. Like there is a change. That's what's happening.
Okay, let's take a look at that. Let's look at those cases. I never thought the Rabbi Blythe paradigm would be so helpful. Right. So it's like even unhelpful articles turn out to be helpful in unexpected ways. Maybe that's Zolt's point. Maybe Zolt's point is that it's actually not clear what tentacles could attach to. Right, Yoni? So.
Well, our tentacle is the same thing as the other model, the octopus thing, or the other model was.
So. Yeah, that's the Rabbi Blythe octopus is the tentacles thing. Right. Okay, so let's look here at the examples, some very nice examples. Yeah, that's right. Well, I take the Yorid case. We'll talk about Gabe's point on the chat in a second. So let's talk about case number one. I love this case. So Melamed is Ben Chavero Shalom Daito. So this is such a great case, right? You start teaching your friend's child Shalom Daito, right? So Metal and Ami are hanging around in the background of our Zoom. So could I send Yakir and Gabe a bill for? No, I'm just kidding. That's the Malamid Shalom Midaita. This is Midaitam. It's Midaitam. Of course I could send them a bill. No, so it's an interesting question. So the Rashba here in Zion, Tafkuf Tes Zion, talks about, well, Zachariah, why don't you take us through the Rashba here? Adam Shahalach Medina Sayyam.
Yeah, so some guy travels far away, kind of abandons his kid, and then I assume some Chabad guy comes and sees this poor soul, and he just teaches him, takes his own initiative.
Shua's early morning chavrusa.
That's right. Teaches him, the Chumash, Tanya, Tehillim, and
all the essentials.
That's right. And so the Rashba paskins that, listen, since the child, it's a little complicated how all the factors come in. He mentions that, the father is chayv to teach the child. No one I read that, therefore, that makes the child almost like a sada asuyalita. And then Rashba kind of strangely paskins, okay, so therefore he should surely get paid, but actually he only gets paid yado al taftona.
Yeah, hold up on the yado al taftona part. Tell us about the first half. You're suggesting. Yeah. Suffolk you have about the reading, I think that's very important.
Yeah, so let's actually get inside. So it says, "V'adam shalach l'midas hayam." So the first point Rashba says is you have to pay the teacher. Lafishu kamo sada ha'omid lita, because the child or maybe the father is like has a field that's ripe to be planting. Va'amrina yoredato sada shaman al hatachtona. So someone who has someone who's yored, we evaluate it. So granted al hatachtona. And the father is obligated to teach his son. So it's unclear what that's going on.
Exactly. So, but obviously the most important thing here to establish that the Rashba appeals to Yored in a service, in what appears to be a pure service case, right? I mean, the case is whether do you have to pay the Chabad Shliach, right? I mean, he pulled your kid off the basketball court, started learning Tanya with him. Do you have to pay the guy? And the Rashba says, yes, mitam yored, which is just really, minyan yored eitzol schiras poalim, right? I mean, is this like planting something in your backyard? And the Rashba wants to say yes. And he says, he's like, the kid is like a sada ha'omed lita. And I think Zachariah is right to say, well, why is that? Is the kid a sada ha'omed lita because every child is like supposed to be learning? Or is it because the father presumably wants the kid to be learning? Or because the father has an obligation for the kid to be learning? Are these two separate ideas here, that the kid's a suyalita and the father has an obligation to teach? Or is he a sada suyalita in virtue of the father having an obligation to teach? right? Those things aren't so clear in the Rashba. I could see some good, like for our Torahs based off like, in what sense is a child a sadaha suyalita? That's makes for good drasha material.
The end of the Rashba would seem to say that, at least in his explanation of Yadoa Tachtona, seems to point more to like the kid, like the haben ain't sarich lemelamed ki'im nichamishim dinarin. I guess that's also ambiguous. You could read that as like, is that in terms of the kid's requirements in order to hit his chiyuv of Talmud Torah, or is that like all he requires to, like he doesn't need a fancy tutor?
Yeah, it's a good question, right? So, let's say, it's a good point. Let's say SAR pulls a kid in, right? Adin pulls a kid off the street and puts him in an SAR classroom. Let's assume that SAR is mashbiach in some way. It's an interesting question, right? Could SAR say, oh, here's a bill for $35,000, right? We taught your kid chumash. Or could you say, no, the chumash value is really at, $5,000 and everything else is inflated. I think that's the second half of the Rashba, right, Adin?
So I think that's a better read. My initial read was like, oh, this kid needs, in order to like, this, whatever, the kid has some either expectation or requirement, however you want to call it, to learn X Prakim of Tanya. And like that really only, like he only needs $50 worth of Tanya. So you charge $100. Your read is a better one. More like.
I think it gets at a similar point here. Now we'll see that the Rishonim, you can see the Shulchan Aruch quotes this, Melamed and Ben Chaver Shalomi Dasa Av. So notice again, Shalomi Dasa Av, and the Rashba's case is Adam Shahalach Lemdina Sayam. So it's totally without the father's awareness, right? I mean, the father's totally out of the picture. He could still be charged for the costs, or at least for the being Mashpiach, the kid, under the paradigm of Yorid. Shulchan Aruch quotes it, Yesh Omrim D'chayiv L'Shayim L'Kedim Yorid L'Tov Sada Shel Chaver Shalom Bershus. Kimoshe's bar bisimin shenayin hey, which is diore. We'll talk about the Yesh Cholkim later on, why some people disagree with this. The Mordechai in Sofer Se'omnim also quotes the Maram, Nishal Leharav Rav Meir, Melamed Sha'omer Lo Bala Bayis Lamodim Banai. Notice it's a different case. Here it's a case where the Bala Bayis says to learn with my child, but he doesn't specify the compensation amount. Below Nadarbo Shum Davar. I sat on a case in the Bezin exactly like this. A father sent his kid to yeshiva in Israel, never signed the tuition contract, and it's like, I don't have to pay anything because I never stipulated the amount. It's exactly this argument here in the Mordechai. The Mordechai says from the Maram Yorenberg, Shetzarech litein lo lefi hazman shalamad, and rab hein ma'at, kemoshe regilim litein lo b'makom acher. Pay the market rate for the yeshiva service. You see, when I read this Mordechai, and this is what the Shach is pointing out, it's actually strange that the Mordechai feels the need to add that this is domel yored. You see, because for those of us who were here last year, and even in our parak, Hakol Kaminei Kamedina, you would think if you're socher sapolim, you don't fix the rate, you clearly hired the guy, you just have to figure out the compensation rate. So pay him kamina gamedina. It's interesting that the Mordechai here appeals to Yored L'toch Sada Chaveo Shalo Bershus for this case of the Mordechai. You might think you don't even need Yored. Yored is where there was no request for the service at all. There's a chiddush that you have to pay for the service. You might think that principle is not relevant to a case where you're socher es apoel, you just didn't fix the wages, so we interpret the implied das to be in accordance with minhag, right, or with the going market rate. I think the fact that the Mordechai conflates these two things, again, it's hard to know if he actually conflates it. He says logara miyorid, so it's hard to know if that shows that they're different. But the fact that he thinks that yorid is relevant suggests that he doesn't think there's a real difference, strong difference between schiras polim questions and yorid questions. That's different, though, from the Rashba and the Shulchan Aruch that are talking about cases of Melamed Shalomi Dasav and Adam Shahalach Lemedina Sayam, where they think that you're Chayiv L'Shalem Mitam Yored because the child is really considered to be a sadasi alita. So even if there's no contractual relationship at all, and it's not just that there's ambiguity about the compensation amount, there's a duty to pay simply mitam mashbiach. Now you can see the Shachir is upset by the Rashba and the Shulchan Aruch, and he tries to read them in light of the Mordechai. He says that he says there wouldn't be a duty to pay if there wasn't some antecedent request from the father. The only duty to pay is kivan ta'amale lemod im banai. But we can hold off on the shach for now. But what I think we should take out of the Mordechai and the Rashba and the Shulchan Aruch, for the Rashba and the Shulchan Aruch, we could take out, what's the important conclusion? I think that Yored applies to pure service, to the provision of pure services. We're going to bracket Yoni's point about the neurons for now, unless Yoni wants to fight back on it. But I think this is teaching somebody is like a pure service provision, and they think you're chayiv to pay mitam yored. I think we could take from the Mordechai something a little stronger, and that is the Mordechai blurs the division between the question of schiras poalim, meaning the question of you hired somebody and we need to figure out the compensation amount, with the existence of a duty to compensate in the first place. He just thinks those are like one and the same, or at least they're interchangeable.
What's the meaning of Stadeh HaOmed Lita with regard to us Stad learning Torah, if it's a pure service? Like, what does it mean that something like Rawi for a pure service? Like, I don't know what that means even, if it's like only a service.
Well, it's not like he did something, it's not like he did something so extraordinary that's not normally paid for.
Or I think we could say that, like, that we don't have proof that this applies to pure services, that the Av doesn't have an antecedent chiyuv to do. If I come and give a kid soccer lessons, we don't have proof that I can claim yored on that.
True. It's an interesting point. So we'll limit it to certain kinds of services, I agree. Let's say services that are omed lekach, or asuya, analogous to asuya lita, but it's still a pure service, right? I mean, it's, I don't think you could say that, like, there's this tangible difference, like this property right that the mashbiach has in the child.
You could say that the father was going to have to spend either time or money to do this. Like, that in this case where there was a pre-existing chiyuv, we could translate that into the father was going to have to spend something, either time or money, in order to teach his father, to teach his kid Torah. So there I can really claim that there's some sort of tangible benefit, whereas soccer lessons, not necessarily.
It's interesting. Let's hear from Noah and Zachariah.
Yeah, so like 2 points. One, just like I think you could like read the Rashba, like a really strong reading. Like what Adin was saying is like, this is just literally like somebody else paying my electricity bills. Sort of like I have like a very clear, obligation to pay for my child's Talmud Torah. I don't think you need to read the Rashba this way. But I thought maybe that was one possible reading.
I think the question is, like, why is he appealed to Yorid then? You know, like, you'd think he wouldn't need that to bolster his argument if he's just saying, look, you're mechuyav lekach, and therefore,
Right.
And I think there's a way to read this where these are actually two separate arguments, right? There's the Yorid argument, and there's the v'hu mechuyav lekach argument. There's two separate things. So, like, Nafkamina, for example, let's say all kids on the main line, Philadelphia main line, where I live, it's like Noah could tell you about it, right? It's the main line. That's right. Natchez Lane. That's right. Every non-Jewish minivan here has a Lower Merion Soccer Club bumper sticker on it. You know, it's just what people do out here. So, you know, in Adin's example, like every child is like a soccer player, Suyalita. I mean, it's just what people do, right? And so you might think that would apply if I give your kids soccer lessons out here. That's like the same thing as the Rashba's case of Talmud Torah. And then Uhu mechuyev lekach is a separate argument, not based off asuyalita. That would be like Noah was saying that there's a, it's just like paying your electricity bill. Right? Noah, do you hear that? Yeah. Okay, great. Zachariah, go for it.
Yeah, quick other point about the Rashba. I think the Rashba fits very nicely into one of the points that Evan made, that the Rashba, you can, we didn't go into it, but the fact, how he understands the spread, as in he reads Tachtona Elyona as a spread of possible schiras, like the Balamor. From that, that's actually the most likely candidate to be subject to kind of like, yeah, why would you distinguish between a tangible or an intangible good? If, listen, while we are, all the halacha of Yori just tells us that you can have implicit or just kind of like non-contractual schiras. You know, once you already, I think once he's in that framework, it's actually very easy to make this jump.
You're saying it's clear that he's thinking in terms of the market, the labor market value of the service.
Yeah.
And so you're saying that shows that he's clearly in like Schiras Poalim land?
Yeah, and therefore he doesn't even have a Havmina to be Mechalik to say, oh, Sada Asu Yolita. I was like, because the Hotzos is not even in his framework. That's not even a factor.
That's interesting. So you're saying when he talks about Yad Melamed Al Tachtona, he's talking about like high quality Melamed Ashir V'Tov. Interesting that the richness of the Melamed factors into his compensation rate, right? I guess that's just, I guess he wouldn't do it for less. Or he thinks that like a Melamed Ashir is better than a poor Melamed.
Ashir some way. Yeah, Ashir like being a good teacher.
Right. But he's saying, yeah, so that's a very interesting point. And you know, this, and I guess the point is strengthened by the fact that the Rashba, like al atar, like in our sugya, the Rashba is a Rashba, like he's not a Balamor guy. Right, in our sugya, going back to our sugya, the one that Zolti was emphasizing. Here, the Chidushei Rashba says, Pirshu rov mefarshim yad al tachtona shevach yasar al otzah. And then he quotes Shmuel, he quotes the Balamor. You don't get the sense that he's siding with the Balamor. He says Pirshu rov mefarshim. So it's interesting that as Zachariah points out in the Tshuva, the Rashba pivots to, yeah, the compensation rate of the Melamed as the baseline. Interesting. Okay, good. Yeah, really good point. Okay, who's next? Yakir, you had a Hara.
It was more or less equivalent to Zachariah's. I was just pointing out that it's interesting, just for our discussion on Yad Al Tachtona here, that Rashba is using Yad Al Tachtona in a case where presumably there's no relevance to the concept of Shevach. That's more or less the flip side of what Zachariah just said.
Right, it's like how much would you pay for a Talmud Chacham child versus a non-Talmud Chacham child, right? Something like that. Yeah. These are great questions. Yeah.
I assume you're talking about Evan Nimkar Bashuk, right?
Yeah, that's right. How much do you pay for Talmud Chacham, for like Tavi or somebody else? Okay, so Noah, this is the second question about the Rasha. Why is the Yad Al Tachtona for the Siolita? Yeah. This is a difficult, this is the Achronim on this question a little bit. Why is it Yad Al Tachtona here? Let's hold off on that because I'm more interested in, why is it Yad Al Tachtona here? It's a good question.
Would it be good if
to Noah's? Anybody have an answer for Noah off the bat? Zolt, you're interested in about in the other daya? Is that interested in about the Talmud Torah question?
Well, yeah, the Rashba quoted Yishchokin. I mean, that's
against it. We're going to talk about that tshuva later on. Here, I'm just interested in the Talmud Torah case as a paradigm of pure poel. We'll talk about the unique question whether you could claim Yorid compensation for Talmud Torah. This is like why you trying to charge the Columbia guys and the Zolt. It's a real question, right, Adam? Right?
Yeah, very relatable. I feel very much.
Yeah, this is like the sugya to figure out when YU goes after the non-YU guys for benefiting from YU shiurim, right? So is this like, oh, we're mashbiach you here? Give us the check, right? Hagam Hagam that there's no contract or Gabe also, right? Like Hagam that there's no contract, like we're mashbiach you, and so you ought to pay us. So, but that's a bit of a separate question, unique to Talmud Torah. So let's pick up. We're going to talk about that question separately, actually.
For Noah's question, could it be because in this, if we want to call it pure service, there we can't really like we can't apply Yado al Ha'Elyona because there's no tangible shevach, so all we have is labor cost. That's like the only thing we could look at if we want to try to determine some sort of benefit.
Yeah, but still, why is the labor cost the lower end of the labor cost and not the higher end?
Right. Or is like I have to look back to see how the Rashba how he says it in his Chidushim, but is okay. Or Zeruah that introduced the higher like that
Balmar.
You know, meant higher labor costs and Yerba Tosfon is lower labor costs. Maybe it's that
Balmar,
that's what I meant. Could it be for the Rashba, the two options are Yadoha Tatlona is going labor amount. Yadoha El Yona is Shevach, something like that. But
yeah, but I think it's clear in context that he's thinking about a spread within the labor market because he's thinking, right, a Melamed Ashir would take a lot. Ba'ben Eino Tzarech LeMelamed Kim Chamishim Dinarim.
Okay. So implying that
One way of diffusing this, the whole discussion here. It would knock out Noah and Zachariah's Haros and all that. It's just he doesn't mean Yadol Tachton in the technical sense of our Sigya. He just means, yeah, like in this other sense, that look, there's often a differential between the actual benefit value and like the how much, like the what this guy could charge in other markets. We could hold up. It's like the SAR case, right? I mean, if SAR pulls a kid in, they can't just send a bill for their inflated rate. Same with REITs, right? So if REITs says, oh, you're benefiting from our services, this is what we charge people. We charge, you know, like they say, we charge our coal guys like $30,000 a year. You know, like REITs says that. But then you're like, wait a second. Like, how in the world are you guys charging $30,000 a year for, right, giving us a bechina four times a year? And then you say, oh yeah, so that's really that's how much you should be paying for, right? The bechina service, not the inflated service. So it could be a Yadol Tachtona here doesn't draw from the way it's being used in the sugya, which actually to my mind might reinforce the notion that see Yadol Tachtona, Yadol Yona is like a separate consideration b'fnei atzma, which is it's not like part of the determination of the compensation rate. It's just a way of saying like, well, are we gonna high end, low end, and like other factors could factor into that. Yakir, you have a hand. Gabe, your hand's still up. I assume you left it up from a while ago. Yeah, I'll just put it down. Yakir, you have a comment here.
Yeah, on Noah's question here. This is just clarifying. This is only a question if we assume, like Rashi's read, that that somehow Shmuel is somehow equivalent to Yadaval HaElyona. If we assume that Yadaval Tachton HaElyona and the Shmuel rate versus the Rav rate are two separate dinim, then this just happens to be a case where you're a Sadasi Elita, but it's also Shelo Bershus. So it makes sense that it would be Yadaval Tachton. Right?
You're saying if in general a sada anything shalom bershus is yadol tachtona, that's fine.
Yeah, I mean the question only arises if you assume that that the Gemara does say that sada ha'si'alita is a din of yadol ha'aliona, which is only true if you have Rashi's conflation.
Ah, you're saying there's a way of viewing this. Sada Sialita still be viewed as Yadol Tachtona.
Yeah.
And Shmuel is then viewed as what? You're saying Yadol Tachtona within. Interesting.
It probably comes to the same thing you were just saying, that the Yadol Tachtona is a separate din that says always low end it. And then in a Sada Sialita, you low end it among labor costs, labor rates. In a Sada Shania Sialita, you low end it among Hotzah. Versus Shabbat.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. Yeah, I like that, Ara. Good. I'm going to add you.
So then Shmuel is also saying, like, according to the Rashba, how do you read the Rav Papa then? Like, you know, it's Rav Papa saying that if it's not a Sialita, then we do Yadala Tachtona like Rav, and if it's a Sialita, then we do Yadala Tachtona like Shmuel. And just they're both called Yadala Tachtona, just different varieties of Yadala Tachtona.
You could have like Yadala Tachtona within Shmuel. Are you back here? You could have that idea.
Yeah, I think that's right.
I think we have to sit a little longer on the on that question here, but these are, it's a good suggestion. I'm not totally sure. I want to think more about it when we look back at this Asialita and Asialita distinction. Let's talk about the other case very briefly. So the Meshavah Veda discussion, you have a Ramban in Bav Mitzia Lamed Amud Beis. So the question here is, if you're Meshavah Veda for someone, the Gemara thinks that you're entitled to be compensated Kipoel Badel. If you do a service of giving back someone's lost item, you're entitled to some sort of remuneration for the service. Now, you see the Mishnah here talks about Hayabata Misela, Lo Yomer Lo Tain Liyasasela, No Sen Lo Scharo Kipoel. We don't have to get into the details of the sugya. The idea is that if you're mevatel from your malacha to return someone's lost item, so like say Shua takes off an hour of work to give back someone's lost item, he can't charge the Bala Veda $600 an hour for his service. Shua only gets to charge like his pre-corporate law billing hours, right? Like his $15 hour rate, not his $600 an hour rate, right, Shua? That's the idea. That's the main idea here, the Gemara. But the point is that he's still entitled to be compensated for his Ashavas Aveda service. The Ramban gets very upset by this, or he's worried about this, as a lot of Rishonim are. Why is this different from the case of Mavriach Hari Minichsei Chavero, who's Pater? By the way, Mavriach Hari is a really fascinating question for the halacha's distinction between just like preventing a loss and being Mashbiach, something that we should think about more deeply. But what's important for our purposes is why the Ramban's distinction that he draws between the cases. So Mavriach Hari is when you prevent somebody from suffering a loss. There the Gemara thinks you're not entitled to be compensated for your service. So what's the difference? So what does the Ramban say? Anybody want to just tell us the Ramban's answer? Anybody had a chance to see this? Anybody have a chance to see it yet? So the Ramban says, V'li nira, d'schar pe'ula, the compensation for the service is considered mamona demati liyade debala vedahu. V'dami lepoel she'osa melacha b'shel chavero, shalom yidaito, damina lekaman, denota mi balabais, masha hena oso. Ramban says, somebody who does a service for somebody else, so this poel who's doing the service for the Baal Aveda, is like a poel who's osa melacha b'shel chavero, shalom yidaito, who's entitled to recover masha hena oso. Pretty interesting, right? Sounds like the Ramban's saying, he doesn't mention Yored explicitly, but he's saying that a Yored is considered Mashbiach. Schar Pa'ula is considered Mamona Dematel Yade. It's as if he's, you know, to borrow maybe Yoni's paradigm, it's as if the Balabayas received that labor of the Poel, right? It's as if that amount just fell into his bank account. Whereas Mavriach Hari is different. He says it's lo mati liyade de balabayis al mechilas chobo. He thinks that there's a difference between a service that's as if you've given mamona into the balabayis's property, you've like conferred some valuable thing onto him, versus mavriach hari type cases where all you've done is maybe stopped some loss from the balabayis, silo gedoch gomimenu. You relieved some pressure from the balabayis, but in order to be entitled to compensation, it has to be ki'ilu it's mamona demati liyade de balaveda. And he cites this case of poel she'osa malach b'shel chaver shalom yidaito kenota mi balabayis masha hena oso. So just mention that Gemara in a second. You can see the Shulchan Aruch in Reish Samech Dalet and Hilchos Aveda Metzia quotes this. And he says over here, quotes the Ran, who says the following. V'chein kol Adam she'oseim chavero pe'ula otova lo yuchal lomar b'chinam asisa imadi ho'avolo tzibisicha el etzarech li tein lo scharo. You know, he generalizes from the Ashavas Aveda case to a general rule that anybody who does this kind of service for somebody else could basically demand compensation for it, right? He says you can't claim that it's a b'china masisei madi, it's tzarech litein lo schara. So you get here from this Ramban and from the other Rishonim and of the Chachmi Sfard, sounds like this all-out extension of the idea of Yored to just mehane through a pula. Isn't that right? That formulation seemed to suggest this. Evan?
Would the Ron's formulation include the Ari case or no?
So I doubt it. I think... yeah, like would that kind of pu'ula or tova fall into the description? It's hard to know. It's hard to know what, like, where to draw the line. And right now I'm less interested in like where to draw the line and more just in the extension of Yored to these, you know, pu'ula or tova cases. Yeah. Oh, yeah, here, is that an old hand or a new hand?
It's an old hand.
Okay. Zolt, do you have a hand?
Yeah, isn't the fact that the Ramban is mechalik between a case where there is accrued benefit, there's like actual, like the Aveda has been gotten, versus the case where like the guard is alone, imply that he's explicitly differentiating between like services that have a tangible benefit versus things that don't have a tangible benefit? Isn't that what his chiluk is mostly based on?
Interesting. You're saying is it the Aveda that's considered to be the...
Well, it sounds like the Mati Liyade, something came to his hand, like there's a tangible change.
Well, look what he says. He says, Dischar Pe'ula Mamona de Mati Liyade de Bala Vedahu, right? The value of the service is considered to be Mamona de Mati Liyade. So it's like the service is the Mamona de Mati Liyade. Vidami Lepoel Sha'osem Alacha B'Shel Chaveiro. You see that, Yoni?
So I'm not fully getting what is the conceptual difference between the two cases? Why is Poreach Chovo not a service?
I think he's thinking that some things are just relieving distress. As I said, this is a difficult problem in the Rishonim's theory of economics, that they distinguish between like a valuable service and a service that just relieves some pressure. It's hard to know, like I think today we would think that any of those things are commodifiable and have value, right? So like they're thinking that like, oh, if your therapist is not, Mamona Dasa Liyade, because your therapist is just like making you less distressed or something like that. This is what the Ramban said, it's Siluk Dochko.
Yeah. Even for the chov, though, isn't the whole point of a baal chov that the chov is also considered to be like a loss of money? Like it clearly has more than just distress.
Yeah, well, the Rishonim are thinking in terms of, they often say there's a very high probability that the chov would never be collected and that you would get out of it some way. So you'd have to look at like, what are the probabilities that the chov would actually be paid? So, you know, I don't know if you ever get like these things from...
Aren't examples of Mavriach Ari more like also monetary? Like maybe you call it the loan, but there's also the case of the guy goes to Yam and you pay for his like children or his wife like while he's gone. That's also Mavriach Ari, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. So it's hard to know exactly. We'll see. Tosas talks about that. It's hard to know what the exact rule is. But for the Ramban,
so that's a threat? Like that sounds monetary. I think Ramban mentions it, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, he quotes in the second paragraph.
Yeah.
So he does quote it.
Yeah, that's considered the Gemara thing is that Mavriach Ari. So why is that not considered to be Skar Pula Mamona de Matil Yade.
Yeah, that's why I thought what it meant was that one was like accruing benefit, there's like something tangible, while the other one's just getting rid of like a debt or there's nothing you can point to.
Right. I think it's different. I think he's thinking that you could easily dismiss those cases as schar pula, as pulos, where there's no mamona de matul yade de balaveda. Maybe because of like the value. I don't know on what grounds you would see something as having a more bona fide market value that's matul yade de balabayas versus other things that are not. It's a good point, Yoni. It's hard to know exactly the distinction. So this idea that like, oh, and kids would have lived off food stamps, you know, had you not been Mepharnes then. So not considered like a service of Mamona de Matul Yade, something along those lines. Yeah. I know it's not so compelling. But the point of the Ramban, the important point is that he thinks that Yored, or at least it seems like this principle easily gets extended to certain pulos that are as if it's Mamona de Matul Yade. Okay, let me just mention the Gemara that the Ramban is appealing to. So this is the Gemara in Asocher Se'umnim, which says, Asocher Se'apoa Lasos Bishalo, let's say I hire Gabe to work for me, then Vehereyu Bishel Chaveiro, but I send him to do work in Yakir's house, so I got to pay Gabe his salary. But I could be chozer for nota mi balabayis masha ha'neu. I could demand compensation from Yakir for the service that I conferred upon him. Now, the Ramban appeals to this, and you can see Rashi here says, even though Yakir didn't request the service, I could demand compensation from Yakir because I was mahanehim through having Gabe work in his field. The Ramban brings this as a raya that the schar pu'ula could be considered mamona das eliyado. Do you think it's a good raya that the Ramban's bringing? That mehana al yidei pu'ula could be considered compensable through this idea of yorid? Is that a good raya? What do you think? What do you think? Is that a good raya? Arguably not. It depends on how you understand this case and Asokar Se'umnim. So why don't we stop here? Why don't we think about this and pick up with it next year? Is this a good raya that the Ramban brings? Okay, then next year, let's just wrap up the other cases. Our Shit Rashba that we had earlier in the year, Great Shit Rashba, Shadchanus and Sarsaris. Those are the best cases. You're a shadchan, you provide this unrequested service. Could you demand compensation for it? Right? That's like the Rishonim are all over these cases. The Pesach Choshen has a whole section on Hilchos Shadchanos. Same if you're a broker, right? You broker something, you weren't asked to broker it, you make a referral or something. Similar to the Rashba's case. Could you say through Yored that you're entitled to compensation? So let's talk about these other cases to wrap up this extension to Schar Pu'ula on Tuesday. And then we'll go deeper into these distinctions between Asuya Lita, Eino Asuya Lita, Rishos, and Shelo Rishos. Okay, I'm thinking maybe we could wrap up Yorei by the end of next week. That might be a little ambitious, but then we could go into our Shomrim Sikis. I'll send out those two articles that are interesting for related to our sugya. All right, shkoyach, everyone. We'll see you all on Tuesday. Yakir's going to nail down our timing.
Check jobs.
Jobs, everyone.
Jobs, everybody.
Jobs.